So hi everyone, my name is Katie Leeson and I'm Managing Director of the social media marketing agency Social Chain based in Manchester. And I every week do a podcast called I Shouldn't Say This But, and it's because I'm a young female Managing Director in a world where I am told that a Managing Director should be an old man in a grey suit. So I started the podcast to try and deal with my own insecurities and imposter syndrome and kind of say things that what you would expect a Managing Director not to say. So controversial at times, a little bit ballsy, and I'm not really scared to say things that you wouldn't expect. And I'm absolutely thrilled today to have such a wonderful guest. I'm going to do a bit of a bio. I'm going to talk about you first.
Oh, great.
So the self-proclaimed sassy, classy and a little bit brassy drag queen Davina DeCampo, originally from Brighouse, which is in Yorkshire, and I'm a Yorkshire girl. Like representing, is internationally known for her high soprano and four octave range, which was very impressive if you watch Drag Race, as well as being featured on national television programmes including The Voice, All Together Now, and most recently the first series of RuPaul's Drag Race UK. Davina has worked with the George House Trust, a charity supporting people living with HIV, as well as hosting Super Beer's Drag Queen Storytime, an event where she reads stories to children with the aim of challenging any negative perceptions of the LGBTQ plus community at a young age. When you're not touring, recording or filming, Davina enjoys a quiet life with her husband. Please join me in welcoming the DDC to the podcast.
Wow. Oh, you did dig in, didn't you?
Yeah,
oh, and we're going to... I feel like you've found out about everything in my life so far.
We're going to dig even further.
Oh, my goodness. dig away.
So before we dive into today's topic, I want to briefly mention why I've asked you to come on the podcast and why I think it's super important that we talk about it today. So it's my personal belief that as a straight female in the marketing and media industry, that we don't do ourselves any favours when we come to producing adverts and producing media that represents everybody. And that is because we are not well educated enough from schools or from life on how is the right way to do it. And I think, to be honest, we're a little bit scared, and we're scared of getting it wrong, and then people just run in the complete opposite direction. So I'm hoping that this podcast is going to be the thing that is a bit of a guide to people, a bit of a how-to, a bit of like, don't be afraid, this is you're not going to get absolutely shouted at by the industry if you get it wrong, hopefully. And recent studies suggest that 50% of people, young people, now say that they're not 100% heterosexual, which, if you think about it, and you think about the area that I work in, which is social media marketing, majority of people on there are young people. And if we're not talking to people in the right way, we are alienating a lot of people from the get-go. So you were once quoted that humour and comedy are the gateways to conversation, and I think it's time we opened up the conversation of how to not fuck up representation within marketing. And that's why I think it's really important that we discuss that today. So I think, with that being said, it'd be great if you could spend a little time talking about your journey.
Yeah, so I'm one of seven. I'm the fifth child out of the seven. There's four boys who are older than me and then two girls who are younger than me. So I think they were just really waiting for the girls, to be honest. And I sort of feel like with me, they got the bit in between.
Yeah. Best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm really, really lucky. My family are all lovely. They weren't always lovely. Mm. You know, we all, like every family, have difficulties and problems. Junior school was fine. And then as soon as high school hit and people noticed that you're a bit different, or, you know, because you grew up from that very beginning stage with those people in junior school, I don't think you seem that weird to them. And then when suddenly you arrive in high school, people are like, I didn't know you before, and so maybe you're a bit strange to me, and the way that you behave isn't what I expect. So high school was a much more difficult experience. Not to say that I didn't have friends, I had lots of friends, but I just also had a sort of a very difficult time because we weren't talking about LGBTQ representation at all. You know, the only people that we saw on TV were Larry Grace. And I mean, I know that makes me sound like I'm 50. I'm not 50. I'm only 36. But, you know, it was either Lily Savage or Larry Grace or Julian Clary. Mm. You know, those were the people that we saw on TV. And it wasn't really until the sort of early 2000s, sort of 2000 and, yeah, early 2000s, I would say, with programmes like This Life and Queer as Folk, you know, that you had representation of different models of queer people, that we weren't all just, oh my God, I can't believe it. Oh, you know, it wasn't all like that. And a lot of that was because of Section 28. You know, it just meant that people were so reticent to even talk about things, that the only way that you could portray anybody who was queer as a man, queer as a man, because we didn't see any representation of women or non-binary people or trans people or, you know, just queer people, you know, in everyday walks of life, as this over the top super camp stereotype, which actually I am that anyway, you know, so that was fine for me because I could relate to that person. But for anybody else who was in that same situation, there was nobody there for them to look at and go, oh, actually, I don't have to just be Julian Clary. I can actually be who I am and still be gay or trans or lesbian or whatever and still be valid. You know, that was the only model that was kind of allowed on television at the time.
You touched on then about Section 28 and you talked about it so well on Drag Race, but the producers have said that's the first time it's ever been mentioned on TV. Like, could you explain a little bit about what Section 28 was?
So Section 28 is very similar to the legislation that Russia have just brought in about the propagation and propaganda of homosexuality within the family. So theirs is slightly different. Ours was directly to do with not just schools. It was to do with hospitals to get, you know, proper treatment, difficult to from your GP. They can just turn you away. You know, there just weren't those the same rights as we have now. So it was basically that you weren't allowed to advertise or create the perception with anybody that you were talking to as a public service employee of homosexuality being equivocal with a normal, in inverted commas, because this might not be seen. just in case so that we're all very clear what page I'm on here, in the bunny rabbits, a normal family, yeah. You know, so the 2.14 children and mother and father.
Crazy.
Yeah, so it was about that's not an equivocal lifestyle, again, in bunny rabbits' ears.
Yeah.
Because, you know, being a mod or a biker, to me, that's a lifestyle. Being gay is actually, you know, just a genetic fact.
yeah, you are what you are.
Yeah, exactly.
And in September, you announced on Twitter that you identify as non-binary.
Uh-huh.
For those in the room who don't know, what is non-binary and when did you know that was your identity?
Uh-huh. So the binary is male and female.
Mm-hmm.
And basically non-binary sits somewhere in between. You know, for me, being a man or a woman is a sliding scale. Anyway, it's a spectrum. And I came to that realisation that children understand that much better than adults do because they haven't been indoctrinated into that. By doing, there's this really very basic exercise. So I'd been teaching and gender politics and politics performance at university. So I do this basic exercise when, you know, if you have to talk about this stuff with children, this is the way that I generally do it, is I say, write 10 things down about a man, write 10 things down about a woman, and then you get them to read it out and, you know, you have a discussion. And every single time, they'll go, but that's not real, is it? That's not real. A man isn't all of those things, and a woman isn't all of those things. It's not real, is it? We're all somewhere in between. And so if children can understand that, then actually it should be much easier for adults to understand that as well. So that's what it is for me, that I don't identify as one or the other. I'm just a person and I'm navigating my way through the world in that way.
Wonderful. So I want to move on now to a few quickfire questions.
Okay.
Growing up in Brick House.
Quickfire.
Okay. You can do this all the time.
There we go. See a little theme tune for you there.
So growing up in Brick House, where is better? The Cromwell Bottom Nature Reserve or Wellhome Park?
Yeah, I feel like I don't live in Brick House.
Well,
I don't know where the Cromwell Bottom Nature Reserve is.
These are the top two put things on Brick House's tourist board of places to visit. Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Oh my good. Well, I mean, Wellown Park is a fan favourite of mine because the Brick House Gala, which is sort of the big parade day that they have, is always at Wellown Park. And then it'd always been somewhere that we'd been and done, you know, those like fun days and stuff like that happened there. And it's a great space. Like it's a really wonderful place. And there's this behind Wellown Park, there's like a wood. And all these skater kids had been up there and dug it all up and made themselves their own skater park up at the top, which probably now that I've said that on this, somebody will go up there and dismantle it.
Oh, amazing. Amazing that they've been so resourceful. Yeah. What was it like working with Nicki Minaj's video director?
That was amazing. Yeah. He was really, really easy to work with as well. He was so open to my ideas and he just really wanted to make it happen and make it work. And I just felt enormously privileged the entire time working with him and his team because it was a team. Wow. There were so many people in the room. I was like, wow, okay, this is usually just me and a camera. and now there's 50 people here all doing things. So that was amazing. It was a really amazing experience.
Wow. Is that one of the highlights then since Drag Race?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That was one of those points, you know, in your life where you feel, oh, I've arrived.
Yeah.
Oh, this is really happening. Oh, my goodness.
That's amazing. And will we ever see the return of your first drag act? I'm hopefully going to say this right. The Italian singer, Farachina.
Yeah, Farachina. Madame Farachina. Unfortunately, no, she's dead.
No, she's dead.
Yeah, a crystal chandelier fell on her
rest
head.
In
terrible.
Peace.
Rest in pieces.
Rest in pieces, Farachina. So we'll move on now to LGBTQ representation. And I want to talk about why it's so important. Why it's important, because I think what we see every day is straight people in media. We don't see a very good representation of the community. Mm. And as you said before, whenever it is, it tends to be over-the-top stereotypes. So I want to get your opinion on that. What do you think of the current state of the advertising and media scene and the representation of the LGBTQ plus community?
I think things have really moved forward, especially over the last 5 years. It feels like there's been a definite gear shift, especially with the bigger corporations, to actually say, well, you know, these people are buying our products as well. We should probably try and key into some more of those people because, you know, we all know that gay folk have a little bit more disposable income usually, so... just so that anybody who can't see this, everybody's face in the room just went, oh, oh my God, what did you just say? Yeah, you know, like I've not had children. I'm a rainbow warrior. So I'm trying to save the planet at the same time as, you know, having nice things in my life. So I've got cream carpets and white walls.
Yeah.
I can't have children.
It's not a good combination.
No, exactly. Mm. So, you know, I have more disposable income. So brands have sort of realised that and gone, oh, actually, we should probably also include these people in our ad campaigns. The places where I think it's not working as well as it could be is in the storylines that some of those characters get. Because, you know, if you look at it, quite often in any of the... I'm talking more about TV shows than marketing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lesbians always die.
Yeah.
They're always killed off. You know, they'll have a storyline for 3 weeks and then she's dead. Well, she was a lesbian. Oh, well. You know, and it's always that. And gay people, you know, there was Cucumber that was out a few years ago, which was the same guy who wrote Queer as Folk.
Yeah.
The only gay person in there who didn't have enormous social problems got beaten to death with a bat by some crazy straight guy. You know, he got killed with a golf club. And everybody else was either, you know, verging on being a paedophile or they were a child exploiting themselves through the internet. You know, so there are massive problems still in representation in how we are delivering these stories about queer people because queer people are just here living.
Yeah.
We're really not that tied up in all of this other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't need to be an over-dramatization of what people's lives are. And I think that's where the marketing side of things actually... a lot of the time is getting it right in that actually you're just showing people living their lives, you know, and they just happen to be two dads or two moms or, you know, a less conventional family, just going about their lives and having a nice time.
Yeah, you see more of it now, don't you?
Yeah.
Like, I saw the McCain ad interspersed with what would normally be seen in advertising, like that diversity of family makeup is what they've shown in their recent campaign. And I think that is the nice way to do it. I don't know about you, but I find it really awkward when someone's really forcing it and it looks like it's forced and it doesn't look like they've done their research. Yeah. It just like slap a
well, we need some queers in here. What should we do?
Yeah.
Just throw them all in, it'll be fine. Taylor Swift. What? What? No, did I just say that? I'm probably going to get sued, aren't I?
No,
oh, well.
It's okay. It's fine. But yeah, I'm with you. So yeah, a common frustration then in the LGBTQ community is the bandwagon brands that just slap the flag on and an attempt to access the pink hand, as you said before. So we've talked about Taylor. Is there, are there any brands that you think, oh my God, just stop? Or any people or any TV shows that you just like, please, just don't, if you're going to try, just don't even do it. Just stop altogether.
I think there's, around Pride time, that's when it becomes most prevalent, you know. Oh, it's Pride Month, even though actually in the UK we don't have Pride Month. It goes on through the entire year and different towns have a Pride festival at different times. If you are a company which has actively funded, not always, but quite often church hate groups, and then you're jumping on the bandwagon with, oh, it's Pride, let's put some rainbow flags outside, let's make a sandwich that is about Pride, woo! And then 10% of the profit will go to some charity that nobody's ever heard of, which may well be doing amazing work, but isn't part of our actual community, then you haven't done your research properly. And a lot of that, you know, when it's being thrown at corporations who have done something, but they're actively working against us at the same time, you know, that's where the issue comes from. You know, so there's a history of, like Chick-fil-A, they are openly homophobic and wouldn't support, you know, anything to do with Pride. But if a company that had been funding something that was to do with them or their research, or and then suddenly they pop up with a flag, look, we support the gays, you know, that's when they're going to fall into problems, because then it is just the pink pound bandwagon.
Yeah.
And there is an element of that, especially in Manchester with the parade, you know, because these corporations have huge amounts of money, so they can quite easily throw 20 grand at afloat, whereas any of the actual organisations within the village who are serving the community day in, day out, and supporting the local charities and stuff like that, I mean, they don't have 20 grand to just throw afloat. That doesn't work.
Yeah, it's become a bit more of a marketing parade, hasn't it?
It has. Mm. It's definitely shifted that way, and I think that that is a problem, actually. Yeah. The depoliticisation of Pride itself is a problem, because if it's not a political movement, what is it?
Mm.
It's just a parade.
Yeah.
And it is, at its core, it is political. It's about saying, we are here, we exist in your community, and we deserve the right to exist in this community, the same as anybody else. Mm. I don't know whether this is still the case, but Pride was the only organisation that had to pay for police presence during the parade, whereas every other parade that happens through Manchester didn't have to do that. You know, so it's those things.
Yeah.
You know, the council say that we are there with you, the police say that we are there with you, but actually you are penalising these people for being there. So there's these things where there needs to be a bit more of a broader look at what is it that you're actually doing as a company, and what are the things that you could be altering in order to really support the community.
And talk to people as well, I think. I quite often say you can't be, or you can't represent what you can't see, and that's one of the reasons why I do my podcast, because I want young females coming up through the industry and in media to feel like they've got something to aim towards. And quite often you see on these big corporations' boards, it's just old men in suits, and it's like, how are they going to have the right ideas to reach people in the right authentic way?
Yeah.
And that representation needs to be there. I think it's a case of brands need to speak to the audience they want to reach and not just think that they're going to get it right.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, the information is out there if you want to look for it.
Mm.
But quite often people don't want to look for it, you know, because it's a... The world is very pressured. We're all go, 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 go. So it's very easy to just go, oh, well, we'll just do this and then that'll be enough. When actually if you'd allow the space, you know, for a little bit more research and talking to people, then actually you're going to come out with a much better product and a much better outcome for you as a business.
Yeah, it's marketing 101. Does people just get so scared to get it wrong, I think. So since you have had the bigger fame from being on Drag Race, have you had any sort of selection process? Have brands been in touch with you about wanting to work with you? And are there anyone you would really say absolutely not to because what they're doing behind the scenes is not what you want to be aligned to?
Uh-huh. Well, I've had like some people asking to advertise through my page and stuff like that. But because I feel a real responsibility to my community, I feel a real responsibility to the younger generation, and I just feel a responsibility for trying to, you know, be a voice of reason and education, that I haven't accepted anything as yet. Because I'm not... personally, don't have enough time at the moment to really look into each company and what it is that they do. You know, like if Nestlé came to me, it would be an absolute no because of their history of poor treatment of workers, poor treatment of women, and the just exploitation of people. That's somebody I could just not work with. Same with Nivea. You know, they said we don't need gay people. So I would never work with Nivea because, which is a shame because I did used to buy their moisturising cream, but, you know, now I'm funding homophobia through it. So I will not buy your moisturising cream. Damn you.
Is there any brands you really would work with? Anyone that you think, oh my God, they're doing great work?
You see, the thing is, every brand that is doing good things, like Starbucks and their advert, you know, you're doing great work, but pay some fucking...
You can swear.
Can I?
Yeah.
Okay, well, pay your corporation tax, man.
Yeah.
Like, you're not paying that, which means that actually you are exploiting our transport systems, the whole of our society, and you're not putting back into it. So you're quite happy to take all the money out of it, but you're not there to actually support what needs to happen. You know, so people complaining about, well, there's potholes in my road. That is because of people and organisations like Starbucks. If they paid their corporation tax, the money is there. There is more than enough money if they pay that tax, like Google and Amazon. If they paid their corporation tax, well, actually, all of those things can happen and we can stop persecuting poor and disabled people. Welcome to the political story.
Yeah, I was going to talk about the couple of ads that I've seen recently. I don't know if everyone in the audience has seen the Starbucks ad, whereby it is a young person who, in lots of parts of their life, gets named as a girl pronoun. Please tell me if I can.
You're fine.
And then it goes into Starbucks and gets asked their name, and that is the point where they can live as they wish, and they give the name that they want to be. And I think that's come from real research that they've done with people that have gone in, and the fact that writing names on cups has actually liberated a lot of people and made them feel like they can be who they can. But I don't think people go as far as thinking about the corporation tax stuff. So that advert has got a really good response, as also the Gillette one, where it's the father teaching the son how to shave for the first time. And that, I think, is an incredible, real hard-hitting video. But again, I just don't think people would go that far in thinking. I think, it's made me think. I'm going to rethink it.
I'm not saying that that advert is not important. It really is. And the response from people who I know and in my community has been, and it's beautiful. It's a really beautiful, clever piece of work. You know, whoever's made that piece has done a great job. I just feel like they have a bigger responsibility than just making an advert.
No, I think it's a very, very fair point. So what advice do you have for brands and marketing agencies on how to represent correctly? Is it as simple as just being brave or being prepared for potential backlash from a minority? What tips can you give?
I mean, the reality is most people don't care these days about seeing two men or two women or a less conventional family on their screens. They don't care. It's not a big deal because some of this has been because we're in a bit of an I'm all right, Jack, so that's fine by me moment in history, which in some ways, you know, in terms of letting other people just get on with their lives has been great. But, you know, in terms of how we as a society function isn't as helpful all the time. So it's just talk to people and talk to those people specifically. If you're going to, like with the Starbucks ad, tell a trans story, make sure it is a trans person's story and make sure it is their story, not, well, I think it would be like this to be trans and you don't know. So actually just go and have the conversation and then you can get a much more authentic representation of what it is that you're trying to do and what you're trying to say to your customer base.
Brilliant. Well, I'm going to open it up now. Has anyone got any questions that they want to ask Davina?
Can you hear me? Hey. So I work in a marketing agency in Nottingham. I have a lot of clients who have come to me in the past and said, we want to do this campaign. I use a gas company as an example. We want to do this campaign and we want to use one of our engineers, who's a woman and who is a lesbian, as the main person that the campaign is going to follow. And I said, cool, do you have those engineers? And they were like, well, no. And I said, okay, well, out of your engineers then, you know, who are you looking at for your audience, like you guys were saying? Who are you looking at for your audience? Because that's not, you know, that's not an accurate representation of actually who your staff are. So that's not right to do that. And I think one thing that I really struggle with in my workplace is that I'm the only person from the LGBTQ plus community. And to have those conversations, a lot of people feel like I'm pushing back on those brands. So what do you think about, I guess, companies and brands coming, maybe not necessarily representing the people they should be, and having those conversations and pushing back, like, well, to be ethical?
I mean, it's to be ethical, it's exactly what you've said. Like, do you have these people in your workforce, or are you just making this story up? Well, you're just making this story up, so that doesn't make any sense, does it?
Yeah.
But you do have those customers. So just show those customers living their everyday life in their home.
Yeah.
And, you know, involving themselves with your company. That would make more sense to me, rather than trying to create, oh, look, we also employ lesbians and gay people, and look, there is a trans person there putting a bolt on something.
I think it's difficult though, because it turns into a tick box exercise. So like, for me, there isn't really anybody else where I work, and I got approached to ask if I want to be featured on the diversity page of the website, and I was like, is that because I'm the most diverse person that you have working here? And I find it really, really difficult to have those conversations internally when, like you said, there's just men on directors' boards and men leaders. I think there's one, maybe a women manager where I work. So it is really, really difficult to have those conversations, but stuff like this opens it up, so...
Brilliant. I think it's down to all of us. I think we've all got a voice. So I think that we can very much lead the charge and lead the change. The podcast of, you know, is called I Shouldn't Say This But, and it's because I admit things that I probably shouldn't say. So I've said things like feminism annoys me. Not all feminism, all for equality, but I just don't like radical feminism because I feel like it's a bit forceful.
Yeah.
I would like to know if there's anything that you would like to admit to the podcast and to the audience that you probably haven't told anyone. So it could be just a secret that no one knows.
I sometimes eat my own toenails. Is that bad enough?
I shouldn't say this, but there we go. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I think that's a good point to wrap it up. And I hope that it's given everyone a really good guide on what they should and shouldn't be doing.
Don't pick your toenails, don't eat them. Don't do that, it's bad for your health.
And thank you for joining me. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.